We are disclosing that we don't have any financial interests. And what I'm going to talk about today with the overview of rapid point-of-care tests is, first of all, I think everyone's familiar with the advantages, which is allowing testing of hard-to-reach populations and outreach and quick turnaround time for test results, and more people receive their preliminary positive and their negative results. But what also we'll be talking about are the disadvantages, which are we're familiar with false positive results, but also that some people lack confidence in point-of-care test results compared to lab results, and in particular, an issue that I think is going to become more of a problem in the United States is false negative results. So I look at assays in terms of generations, and people have talked about these with respect to generations. There are four generations of HIV assays, and I compare them to four generations of basically telephones. And so we're looking at one through four, and in many areas now we're in the fourth generation assay. The first generation assays were all whole viral lysate assays, and they detect only IgG antibodies. And I think it's important that while the first EIA was first generation assay, to keep in mind that both the Western blot and the IFA that we use for confirmation are first generation assays that detect only IgG antibodies. And the state of the art in terms of the diagnostic algorithm really relies on a repeatedly reactive screening test, and at least until the current time, a more specific test like the Western blot has to be used to validate those test results. That state of the art is comparable again in terms of telephones to when the compact computers introduced their first portable computer, when all telephones still had wires. We're still using that algorithm. We're not using this kind of equipment. Second generation tests are a little changed. Synthetic peptides are the antigen in them, but they also detect IgG antibody. And pretty much all of the rapid HIV tests that we are using in the United States that are FDA approved are also second generation assays that only detect IgG antibody. Newt assay people may not be familiar with is a DPP HIV 1-2 assay that's FDA approved. They're also seeking approval for a syphilis and a combined HIV syphilis test. This one is a little different than lateral flow tests. It has a specimen container so that you can do the test more than once. For oral fluid, you basically do the swab, you break it off in the specimen container. With a blood specimen, you use the loop, and then you add a couple of drops to the test. But it's called dual path because basically you apply the specimen and it moves and migrates in one direction, and then you apply the indicator and it moves and migrates in the other direction, which makes it more suitable for doing multiplex kind of testing. And I just wanted to mention this because I think it's the most recently FDA approved. Third generation assays are a substantial improvement. They detect IgM and IgG antibody. In terms of third generation assays, most of them are laboratory based, like the Bio-Rad and then the random access test, like Siemens, AbbVie, and OrthoVitros. The Unigold recombinant is actually third generation in principle. It's antigen sandwich that it detects IgM antibodies as well as IgG. And finally, the most recent, the fourth generation assays, which detect IgM and IgG antibodies and also P24 antigen. And in terms of the fourth generation test, there are two laboratory tests approved in the U.S., the Abbott Architect and the Bio-Rad combo. And then in December 2013, the Determine combo rapid antigen antibody test was approved. And this test has a different stripe for antigen and different stripe for antibody and a control line on it. So of the available fourth generation tests, this is the only one that distinguishes antigen from antibody. The other fourth generation tests just give a reactive result, don't tell you which is reactive. And then to round out things, there, of course, are nucleic acid tests now that detect HIV RNA. There's only one that's approved for diagnosis, which is the Aptima qualitative RNA assay. Viral load assays have been available for a while. They're only approved for monitoring purposes. So in terms of putting this all together with respect to HIV infection, what happens at point zero and the laboratory markers, RNA is the first thing to appear, and then P24 antigen, which appears about 5 days later. On the first 10 days of infection, there are no markers that are detectable. And then antibody begins to appear, first IgM antibody at about 21 days, and then IgG antibody at about 42 days. Now, we define acute infection from a laboratory perspective as the time when RNA is present and people are potentially infectious, and the interval between the time RNA is present and the time the test detects it. So that for the first generation assays like the Western blot, we're talking about a relatively long period, maybe 6 weeks of infectiousness before an individual will be detected. Second generation assays do a little better. It's around 30, 35 days. Third-generation assays with their ability to detect IgM is considerably better, 15, 16 days between infectiousness and detection. And then, of course, the fourth-generation assays, at least the laboratory-based assays, pick up infection within 4 to 5 days of the time that RNA appears. CDC has done an analysis of all the currently FDA-approved tests against seroconversion panels, and this represents the uninterpretable results of all those tests. Basically, we had about 26 different seroconverters, around 176 specimens, and in order to compare tests head-to-head, recognizing that in seroconversion panels, people are bled at different intervals, you don't have exactly the same number of days in between, we drew a line across and said, okay, when do each of these tests detect half of the specimens from the seroconversion panel? So all these people were infected, and obviously they have evolution of these markers. And so this is not exactly window period. This is 50% cumulative frequency of detection. And we don't know when people got infected, but we know when their Western blot turned positive. And so we compared all of those things to Western blot positivity to sort of see where they fit. The Virinostica test, that was the assay that was on the market and most widely used until 2007, picks up infection about 2 days after the Western blot turns positive. And the reason I mentioned it on the slide is that most of the sensitivity studies that were done for the rapid HIV test use this as the comparator assay. When you look at sensitivity, this is what they use in terms of sensitivity. So the CLIA-waived rapid HIV tests right now, Unigold, OraQuick, and Clearview, StatPak, and Complete, pick up infection between 1 and 5 days before the Western blot turns positive. The flow-through rapid test used in the laboratory, multi-spot, Reveal, and also the DPP pick up a little bit sooner, 4 to 7 days. And then the Aviok, which is an EIA approved for use with oral fluid and with dry blood spots, is again about a week before the Western blot turns positive. The INSTI flow-through rapid test a little bit longer. And then the laboratory-based third-generation tests, which most labs are using right now, pick up infection 2 weeks before the Western blot turns positive. Is anybody starting to see a problem here with using the Western blot as a confirmatory test? Now, this is really what the circumstance is. The fourth-generation assays, one was approved in 2010, another in 2011, nearly 3 weeks before blot turns positive, and then, of course, Aptima, the RNA, is around 26 days. The determined combo, at least on seroconversion panels, is a little bit more sensitive than the third-generation assays at about 15 days before the blot, but not quite as good as the laboratory-based fourth-generation assays in terms of its relative sensitivity. And again, remember, these are plasma specimens in seroconversion panels, and different specimens with different specimen matrices operate differently. By comparison, in our analysis comparing plasma to the traditional, or rather the conventional oral fluid test, not the rapid test, but obtaining the OraSure specimen and sending it off to the laboratory, it picked up infection 40 days after the Western blot turned positive. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind when we're doing oral fluid testing, because it has some advantages and it has some disadvantages. But this, I think, is the reason I have some concerns about false negative results with point-of-care tests, because there's a substantial difference in the window period depending on what test you're going to use and what specimen type you're going to use. Obviously, there aren't whole blood seroconversion panels, and so I don't have exactly comparable data for what happens with finger stick specimens. So the question is, of course, why does this matter? And from a study in Seattle among frequently tested men who have sex with men, where they did NAT screening, they identified that 192 were infected with HIV. And of those, 23 had specimens that were only detected by RNA, 12% of them. Of these specimens, there were 16 available to be tested by the fourth-generation assay, and the antigen-antibody combo, the laboratory test, picked up 15 out of those 16. The serum antibody immunoassay only picked up 88% of these, so that 12% of the infected men would have been missed, and the oral fluid rapid test only picked up 80% of these. And so this obviously is a problem when you have people at a very infectious stage being given a negative test result, depending on the test. This is a schema of RNA in semen during the stages of acute HIV infection, and you see during the first 6 weeks we have very high levels of RNA, as well as a high per act risk of transmission, about 1 in 30 to 1 in 200, compared to the long asymptomatic period of infection when we're picking up people who are antibody positive. At least animal studies indicate that this virus is also different during the period of acute infection. At least looking at chimpanzees and semen immunodeficiency virus, it takes 75 to 750 times fewer concentration of virus to establish infection if you're using the virus present during this acute phase. So it's not only high levels of virus, but potentially it's different virus that works together to increase infectiousness during this time period. So the limitations are, obviously, the antibody tests don't detect infection in about 10% of people who are at the highest risk of transmission. The Western blot is less sensitive during early infection than the antibody tests, and the antigen-antibody combo tests, obviously, now are going to make this worse. Excuse me. And they detect antibody-negative people during this acute infection stage. I want to spend a minute talking about HIV-2 infection. In the United States, we haven't thought HIV-2 as much of a problem, but we have come to recognize that it's misclassified by the Western blot, so that in New York, 93% of the HIV-2 positive patients who had documented HIV-2 had a Western blot that was interpreted as positive for HIV-1. In the cases reported to CDC, it was 60% of them. Obviously, the laboratory usually doesn't have demographic or behavioral information in order to say whether this person had sex with someone from West Africa. And though HIV remains uncommon in the United States, HIV-2, it doesn't respond to first-line therapy, like the non-nukes and the protease inhibitors, and it's undetectable by viral load tests. So most of these people with HIV-2 are diagnosed when they deteriorate immunologically and have a negative viral load. Now, again, I'm not trying to say there's an epidemic of HIV-2 in the U.S., but there are clearly more cases than we have recognized because most of them are misclassified as HIV-1 until they get sick. So CDC and the Association of Public Health Laboratories have proposed a new HIV testing algorithm to sort of take into account all of these findings, and this basically is it. You start testing with a combination antigen-antibody immunoassay that would pick up infection as early as possible. If that's negative, we would consider a person to be negative. If it's positive, you now follow it, instead of with a Western blot, with an antibody differentiation assay that will tell you whether HIV-1 antibodies or HIV-2 antibodies are present. And if the first test with antigen-antibody is positive and the second test, which at the current time is a IgG-sensitive immunoassay. If that test is negative, you then go on to do nucleic acid testing. You test those people for RNA. This will allow us to identify acute HIV infection if the RNA is positive. It will then allow us to identify HIV-2 infection in people who are antibody positive and do a much better job of differentiating infected people from uninfected people. The fourth generation assays, when we look at what their sensitivity is, they detect the, again, P24 antigen, which is an HIV-1 only protein, and IgM and IgG for both HIV-1 and HIV-2. The reactive tests, as I mentioned from the lab, don't distinguish antigen from antibody. And at least at the current time, we don't have enough data on the antigen-antibody rapid test to recommend it as the first test in the algorithm. So the recommendation with the new algorithm is that if a person has any reactive rapid test, a preliminary positive, whether it's the ones we've been using or the new combo test, the specimen should go through the entire algorithm. And if the first test in the algorithm is negative, no subsequent testing is negative. In the past, we'd say you go on to Western blot, you go on to whatever it is. At this point in time, it's pretty clear that the laboratory-based fourth-gen assays are more sensitive than any of the rapid tests that we have, and so if they're negative after a preliminary positive, they rule out infection. The HIV-1, HIV-2 differentiation assay, interestingly enough, is a rapid HIV test. It's the multi-spot test. It has two peptides, a recombinant and a peptide for HIV-1, and then one peptide for HIV-2. To have a positive result on this as a supplemental test, both of the HIV-1 spots have to be present, which means if you're going to give a person a positive antibody test result, they've had a positive initial test, and they've had two different positive reactions on this test. So essentially, you have three test results that identify that the individual is positive. The big advantage is this is a rapid test that can be done in between 20 and 30 minutes, and it is very, very easy to do in laboratories. Unlike many places, they do Western blots once a week, and they batch them, or they send them out to a laboratory. So we have a very, very quick turnaround time with this assay. We're going to have, I think, expedited entry into care. The vast majority of people are antibody positive. They'll be positive on this test. Lab people always ask, why don't we go directly to NAT in the first place, if NAT's the most sensitive? The answer, number one, is it costs a lot. Most specimens are going to be resolved with antibody tests. Number two is turnaround time. You know, right now with several of the assays, positive antibody results are feasible in less than 90 minutes. But most importantly, it will fail to diagnose acute infection as acute infection. Under the new case definition, it's stage zero. It won't diagnose HIV-2, and it's important that in 3% to 5% of Western blot positive specimens, RNA is undetectable. So if we use NAT as the immediate confirmatory test, we would miss as many infections as we're currently missing with the Western blot. You have to use both antibody and a nucleic acid test as confirmation. Well, a lot of people are going to be asking, where's my Western blot? Right? We've been used to it for a long period of time, and we've set up a support group for people in America try to get over where they've been coming from with this whole thing. And just as an example, in the Phoenix Emergency Department screening with this new algorithm with fourth gen, in all the people who had blood drawn coming through, about 15% of people declined testing. But out of 13,000 patients screened, 37 had new HIV infections, and one-third of them were antibody negative. They had acute HIV infection. Part of the reason is, of course, is that acute infection causes symptoms. And when people get symptoms, they get sick, they go to the emergency room. We looked at their viral loads. The median viral load in patients with acute infection was 3.6 million compared to the ones with established infections in whom it was 27,000. So this is, I think, pretty good clinical evidence of infectiousness. Massachusetts has been using the new algorithm. The first 8,000 specimens tested, they picked up 3.2% who were antibody positive, one HIV-2. And eight acute infections. They sent those acute sera to CDC. We tested them with a third-gen EIA. Six of them were EIA negative and Western blot negative. Two of them were EIA reactive, Western blot indeterminate. So only two would potentially have been picked up with laboratory testing. And finally, on the horizon, just letting you know that other stuff is on the way. And one of the things that's on the way is the Genius, and I don't know why they use two E's in it. It's a different differentiation supplemental assay instead of the Western blot designed for point-of-care use with whole blood. This test has a cartridge, and the cartridge has two HIV antigens, and it has two HIV-2 antigens, four HIV-1 antigens that are present in it, as well as the control band. It's got an automated reader where you just stick the cartridge in, and it gives you the interpretation, takes a picture of the test result, transmits the information to the laboratory information system, if you have that. And they are intending to go for a CLIA waiver for point-of-care use for this assay. It is currently before the FDA seeking approval. On the horizon are point-of-care HIV NAT tests, the Alere QHIV, the IQWOM by Liat, and I call these really near-patient tests because I'm not sure that point-of-care is exactly appropriate given what we're used to with the manual tests and visual interpretation of the other kinds of tests. But each of these would potentially give a relatively rapid, in less than an hour, nucleic acid test result for individuals. And so we really have the opportunity to soon do this entire new algorithm potentially in a point-of-care setting and get away from this false negative test result problem. So in summary, all the new assays detect HIV infection sooner. And the issue with point-of-care tests, at least in places where we have the resources, is that acute HIV infection plays a major role in sustaining onward HIV transmission, and a lot of our point-of-care tests will miss it, and that's a problem. The new testing algorithm will routinely detect acute HIV infection and HIV-2, and as I mentioned, there is currently a fourth-generation point-of-care tests and new point-of-care tests with new technology are on the way in order to help get around some of these problems. So thank you very much. And I guess that's about Rosanna.